Well, welcome to my podcast. I'm sitting on a late afternoon on the south-facing room in the castle. And thank goodness the days are getting longer and it feels as if there's a little bit of spring and colour in the air. I'm so looking forward to it. Today's guest, Nicola Chester, writes about those outdoor spaces. So I'm thrilled to welcome her here to Highclere. So thank you, Nicola, so much for joining me. And you've written a wonderful book called On Gallows Down by Nicola Chester. And what's very, very special about it is you start mentioning Highclere Castle.
I do. And it's
and Beacon Hill.
Yes, absolutely. And it's such a pleasure to be here because it does feel a bit like a homecoming.
I know, because you used to live on the stud when my power-in-law was alive, and your husband helped with the horses in those days. And it's a very special place, that bowl in the hill, and very old, isn't it? Because it used to be called Skipdale in Anglo-Saxon times, which I love. And now here you are, around the corner, sitting with me in the castle.
It's so just wonderful.
Thank you. And, Nicola, I used to read your column in the Newbury Weekly News, which is our local newspaper, which I always enjoyed because, again, it was about nature and birds and took me out of myself. It was something of a world apart, and never have we needed it more than today.
absolutely. And I think in the writing of it, it does that for me too. And it's just wonderful to write about the wildlife at places like Highclere. And it is just a wonderful privilege.
It is brilliant. And one of my team, Laura, has been going on saying it's the most amazing book and I've got to read, I've got to meet you, you've got to come here. So thank you very, very much for coming here. And it's lovely to welcome a local author with, I hope, a nationally successful selling book. So Nicola, when did you first fall in love with nature?
I can't remember a time when I wasn't in love with nature, but I know that my granddad used to take me on all sorts of romps about the countryside and show me things, and we used to take a little cup with us and drink from the chalk streams and have an ear of corn from the fields and things like that as our picnic. So I think it's very much caught up with family and love. And my mum was wonderful as well. When we moved around a lot, and she would explore all the passageways and parks wherever we were, whether we were sort of a little bit more urban or in the countryside. So it was, it's come from that a sense of exploration and adventure, I think.
Nearly every time I sit here and write a book, my subtitle to start with is always a sense of place, because that's what I feel about living here, as I think you mentioned you did. And that's what I want to feel that my readers feel through my writing, that they are sitting with me here in a sitting room, that they're going for a walk through the gardens, that they're hearing the bird song, and they're looking around and smelling the air almost. And that's what I'm trying to convey in small parts through my writing, although I'm writing more historical books. But again, it's that sense of place, isn't it?
It is. It's so important. And I think it's a way into everything. I think it's that sense of place gives you a sense of belonging. And I think once you feel that, wherever you're from and whatever you're reading, I suppose, then you feel that sort of kinship with a place. You want to know more about it, you want to protect it. And I think if we did more of that, we perhaps might not be in the mess that we're in this sort of environmental and wildlife crisis, I think. Mm. But fundamentally, it's good for us, I think.
I think obviously you and I live in the countryside. And I think we're very aware that everything we eat and everything we do and the air we breathe comes from all the animals, wildlife and trees around us. Perhaps sometimes when you live in a town, you forget the connection. Mm. And this is a time on the planet when more people live in towns. Mm. And actually, without the trees, we'd have no oxygen. Without the grass under our feet, we wouldn't have the earth and the soil that gives us that sense of peace when I take my shoes off in the summer and walk across the lawn, which I'm always doing, because I just feel that sense of belonging.
Yes.
And I think you can otherwise be sort of half in and half out and wondering where you are. So I think your book's very important for that. But when you started writing, what was your purpose? What was your thought process? How did you set your book out?
Well, it's, yeah, really interesting question, because I wrote the book as a love letter to place, which actually is quite a small place, but it has, I suppose, I hope, national appeal, because I hope that other people will feel that about places they might visit. But it's this sort of part of the North Wessex Downs that includes Highclere and a couple of estates along where I live now. And I wanted to write it as a love letter to place, but it turned out to be a memoir. And I did argue with my publishers for a while. I said, it's not a memoir. Don't be ridiculous. It's about the landscape and the wildlife. But they were like, no, it's you as well. You're in the place, which I've come to realise is a very powerful thing. And I started to write it because I felt I had something to say. I grew up in the area, but we moved around a lot. When I was a child, moved around a lot. I think I went to 5 primary schools. But the most ridiculous thing about that is that while it each move felt like a coming away of skin, because I was leaving the landscape that I loved, the trees I loved, the flowers that I loved, we only ever moved about, gosh, at most 10 miles away. So we weren't going far. So, but I think I soon learned that the way you put down roots and belong to a place is through nature, and getting to know your wild neighbours as well as, you know, the people. But then I learned as well that the nature can be taken from you. A tree can be cut down, you know, houses can be built somewhere, that you things like that. And I think that's when I felt that the book was also a voice for nature. I wanted it to be that. I wanted people to consider nature in everything they do. So, yeah, that's where it came from.
How amazing. Well, I suppose I wrote a book called Seasons at Highclere. And again, I was trying to write it from the point of view of place. And I began with the Bronze Age tumuli and the Iron Age forts. And I actually wrote a fictional piece about a family sitting around there because the boys had buried their mother in one of the Bronze Age tumuli. So that's where I wanted to start to again convey that sense of antiquity of place. And that we're just here in our footsteps, in other people's footsteps, mm-hmm. for a time. I don't know, I mean, when you're writing, do you use the idea of steps and footsteps in your own mind, or what goes through your mind when you're starting to write?
I think that's very interesting. I think I'm very aware of, I suppose, around here, the farmed landscape, which is very important to me. It's how we're all here, I think, and it's how a lot of the wildlife is here, because it's linked with that farm people landscape. So I'm very aware that, last year I was looking for a lost horseshoe, and I ended up picking up a very old horseshoe, much older. I never found the one I was looking for, but I found a huge cart horse horseshoe, and I thought, do you know what, people were doing this way back, and I wondered who's it belonged to. I think we are always walking in those footsteps, and I think I sometimes imagine that you can sort of hear those ghosts of you know, friendly ghosts, I hope, but of the past, that can tell you things about the place. It's a fascinating way to write, and I do feel that I incorporate that too. Yeah,
I very conscious, because obviously we farm here, but half the land is farmed and half is for wildlife and hedges and everything else. But the word for farming is agriculture, and the word which we seem to seek thereafter is culture. So we wish to be cultured, but actually it comes from agriculture, because if we can't eat, we don't have the time,
yes, of course,
to find the culture.
Yes.
So I'm always interested in those links of words. Rather extraordinary, I studied Anglo-Saxon language at university. I like old languages. And I find the language of place very important. So I'm always trying to find out what the name of a house or a field or anything else means. I don't know whether you know, but Beacon Hill was... Do you know what its Anglo-Saxon name was?
No, I don't, actually.
Weald Settle. So that was its name in 749 AD. And Weald means wealth. It means the place of the chieftain. And settle is settlement. So there's all those houses on the top there.
Yes.
So that was where they settled. That was an important part of it. And, you know, you can find so many references to the Anglo-Saxon world in the place names all around here,
gosh,
which I love. So I spend a lot of time trying to work out the landscape of culture and agriculture
right.
through the etymology, which is often still in place here.
Yes.
I think it's amazing. Skipdell means sheepdell in Anglo-Saxon.
Oh, right,
sheep.
Right. Which so makes you, perfect
which
sense.
Which is, and a dell is a bowl in the hills, because they were much more descriptive of the landscape. We're probably more descriptive of a road through a town.
Yes.
Which is so interesting.
When we lived here, I looked out the kitchen window and Beacon Hill was right there.
Yes.
With its hill fort on the top. I found it very hard and traumatic to leave here. It was just my husband changed his job and we moved. And now from my bed and window, I can see Gallows Down, Coombe Gibbet, as it's also known. And it has a rather grisly gibbet, as you probably know, on the top. But it's on top of a long barrow, which is the grave of the first farmers of the area, which I think is fascinating. And I often think of them up there and what they think of, you know, what's going on below. And it's just, I love that link of the land with people that have worked with it. And the wildlife that's the sort of evolved with it as well. It's a fascinating thing.
So what was so interesting was I think I hadn't thought about the fact that Gallows would have to be rebuilt.
Yes, it's I mean, this is an extraordinary monument to, I say monument because it was originally erected to show the bodies of two adulterous, murderous lovers, which is a very grisly thing when you think about it. But with each gibbet or gallows either falling down, I think they've been struck by lightning, and I think in modern times they've been sawn down, but they've always been replaced. And I see this very grisly thing as a wonderful viewpoint, and it's, you know, it's quite a landscape marker, but it is quite an extraordinary thing. And I think when I wax lyrical about it, I do need to explain to people that actually I don't see it as this grisly monument in the countryside.
So for some of our listeners are probably not from this neck of the woods, from America, which is a very old land, but it perhaps a younger country in some ways is a better way to put it. But there's something called the Wayfarer's Walk, which runs past Highclere and it carries on towards you past Coombe Gibbet. It's an amazing part of the world, Coombe.
Yes.
And on Gallows Down, where, you know, you're referencing. And people probably made this footpath. They made this path. And they made this path 4,500 years ago or longer, because it probably dates back to Bronze Age or Neolithic times, which again is 4,500 BC rather than just 4,500 years ago.
And
it's the chalk landscape, it's the water, it's the oak trees, it's the woods, it's the wildlife, it's to be able to see. I presume they walked along there because they could see where they were going with the higher part of the landscape, which they could look down on and perhaps move away quickly if they saw some marauders coming into view.
Goodness.
But it is extraordinary. I think it extends something like 80 miles, doesn't it? It's one of the oldest roads in the country, footpaths. And then I think you wrote about field faring, didn't you, in your book?
Yes, that's right, yes. I made a promise to, when my son was born, that I would relearn all the names of the birds and the plants that I'd sort of forgotten in the, you know, after your teenage years and things, and teach him them. And I was fascinated by the field fare, these wonderful winter thrushes that come over from Scandinavia, and they spend the winter with us. But they spend their time marching across the fields, picking up worms, and, you know, very much a farmland bird again. Once all the berries are stripped from the trees, they'll then, and they look like this sort of scattered army going across the field, and literally field faring, which is just a wonderful name for them.
And then they wheel through the sky, don't they? And
yes.
They are extraordinary, quite lovely.
Yeah, they are.
But I love it here because there's some water not far from here. And in the autumn, the swifts, they dip down. You see them having a quick drink and going up again. It's so
wonderful.
Special. And they sit actually on all the telephone wires and things like that.
Yes.
Oh. But just cluster around there. And then they, quite a lot of them swirl all around the castle tower here.
Oh, wow.
And I presume there's lots of flies and things
yes,
like that.
Yes, yes.
So I think they're collecting them before they head south.
That's wonderful.
So
I do remember the week we left Highclere, actually, and the house martins that lived under the eaves of the cottage. And, I mean, we shared the cottage with a lot of wildlife, which I loved. Mm. there were bats and all sorts of insects and the birds. And I remember the house martins whirling around and coming up at the window, and it felt like a bit of a send-off. It was quite nice.
Oh, amazing. But I think, again, and I'm sure you'd agree, that these older houses, the older chapel, the older barns, they are not perfect. They've got holes in the roof. But that then allows us to share it with the wildlife. When you have these more modern, airtight houses, they're not for sharing, so they're not so positive for wildlife. So they do need boxes on the walls. They do need a little bit of, you know, it's like when you make an imperfect cake and your fingers have left a mark in it as you've been icing it or putting it together, and you were a bit, well, I was a bit in haste. And you can see I was, but it's the same thing with that. It's actually to its advantage. And it's to our advantage too, because they do pick off all the blooming flies and stuff.
Yes, it's so true. It's so true. And I'm with you on the baking as well. It's a good analogy. But yes, absolutely. And I mean, the cottage we live in now, it's not an old one. It's 1950s, but there's plenty of little, you know, again, it's a little bit tumble down, but we like that because we share it. And it is really, really important. Yeah,
because it's not just us. I think we forget sometimes, which I think it comes across very strongly from your book, that we are part of nature. We shouldn't be trying to control nature. We should understand that we are with it, and whilst we are dominating this world, we need to step back and be a little bit more humble about how we take our own life forward and where we build and what we do.
Yes.
Rather than some of where we go at the moment, which is the other subtitle for Seasons of Hightley was Treading Lightly on This Earth.
Oh, goodness, yes.
Which I think very is where
important.
We should be, rather than just plodding straight in and jumping like a sack of potatoes on something.
Yes, yes.
Not helpful.
No, that's absolutely it. You're absolutely right. We are part of nature, and you know, it's body and soul and health and all sorts, but for nature as well. Yeah.
I always think at the end of our lives, whatever time we're given, we then return to the earth. So it gathers it up at the end.
Yes.
You know, and
yes.
I think that is where we're from, if we can just remember it a little bit better. But so when you wrote your book, how long did it take you to write your book?
Well, I'm slightly embarrassed to say that it took 8 years. I'm writing another at the moment, and I've been told by my publisher it mustn't take that long. So, but I think it was, I was writing it because I felt, I had to get it out. I'm sure you know what that feels like. You just have to get it down on paper. And I was busy raising children and busy lives and that sort of thing. So it was something I wrote between the gaps of life. And then my lovely agent said, you know, we really need to get on this. So I did the last bit with more purpose. I distilled it over a number of years.
Do you start at the beginning and work your way through, or do you...
I think certainly the book I'm writing now, I feel like I have. But this one, I think I cherry-picked quite a bit. And then I found that actually I needed more of a narrative flow. It was a little... So I messed around with the chapters and moved them around a bit. I did write in longhand with pen and paper for a while, and actually it's quite difficult if you're... So a laptop makes that much easier. Yeah, so it was sort of quite tricky sometimes to sort of make everything flow, but I think it's more like a river comes together and you've got all the different threads and tributaries and eventually it all comes together, I hope anyway.
No, it does, without a doubt. So I'm sure you've done lots of talks around here, haven't you, about it all, and the Hungerford Bookshop who came here.
Yes, absolutely. They're a wonderful, wonderful community bookshop. Yeah. And I think, as all good indie bookshops are, they're really a strong part of the community. But it's quite extraordinary, actually, because the book won the Richard Jefferies Prize, and it was shortlisted for the Wainwright Prize, and it's taken me all over the place. I'm not much of a traveller. I did have a wonderful time as a cowgirl in Canada for a while, which was lovely.
Wow.
But apart from that, you know, I don't travel very much. And I've been all over the place with it. I've been up to Sheffield, I've been to Wales with it, doing all sorts of book talks and literary festivals, and it's just been wonderful what a book can do.
Amazing. Yeah. Just so many congratulations. I hope everybody listening will try it and buy it. And like anything else, if you're not in this country or not near a bookshop, it's on Amazon.
Yes.
Good old
yes.
Amazon.
That's right.
And although Amazon is sort of both the bane of our life, it's also such an advantage because, you know, yes. I wanted to buy a book on yew trees. I thought we've got some yews. I want to know more about them. And what's extraordinary is you can just do that.
It's amazing.
Which is amazing. Although the algorithms, I guess, push the books towards you, whereas going into yes. a bookshop, and the other bookshop that comes here is P.G. Wells from Winchester, which
are wonderful.
These wiggly-waggly bookshops where you go in and you find, you know, exciting books at the back which you weren't looking for.
Yes.
Magic. But anyway, I do hope people will look for On Gallows Down. It's a really lovely book. Will your next book have any photographs in at all?
I would like it to. Yeah, I do hope so. I'm mingling a woman that farmed in our village. She wrote a diary during the war. And I'm sort of mixing her life with a bit of memoir as well. So that I'm unearthing some fantastic photographs and facts about her. So it goes back to farming and landscape, sense of place again.
But again, without farming, we wouldn't be here. And we can't magic food.
No.
You know, and equally well, you can't not protect the landscape.
Yes.
And the trees. And I'm always trying to remind people the importance of veteran trees. You can't just lop down a tree because it offers so much in terms of the insects, the beetles, its communications underground. It is so precious. I understand that we do grow stands of trees for timber and obviously for the books that you and I love to read and to
yes.
write, but not the older veteran trees which are everywhere in Canada or in this country
yes.
in America. They are something different because they offer the learning curve to the new young trees around
yes,
them.
Yes, yes.
And what's wonderful here is in the woods, we can, when a tree falls down, you can let it lie and you can let it...
Wonderful.
You can just let it rot down.
Yes.
But in its decay, it brings life.
Absolutely.
And as well as that, we try to mark the footpaths and I try and put signs saying, please don't go beyond this point. Leave space for wildlife. Because if we trample through the woods, you disturb the nesting birds, you disturb the mammals, they won't come back. And I think if you disturb a nesting bird, you know, I think twice, it will then not go back to its eggs again. Mm. So again, you lose that whole year of hope.
Yes.
And
yes.
it's just trying to say to people, this is where we walk on this world and leave that for others. So I try to do it in polite ways, Nicola. And whilst I think it's important to walk, there are quite a lot of footpaths.
Yes. It's so hopeful. It's a radical thing, actually.
Well, you have to be hopeful, don't you? Because
yes.
otherwise you would definitely give up. So I'm
yes.
always hopeful. I'm the glass half full, and I know you are as
yes.
well. And you're clearly a glass half full because you're putting yourself through the process of writing another book.
Yes.
And I'm going to start writing another book too. And I was sent a treatment off to the publisher. And my husband said, oh, no, you promised not to for a while. I said, well, it's been a while. Now I'm doing it. So.
Oh, that's exciting. But it is exciting, isn't it? I mean, it might not be to those around us sometimes.
No,
but yeah,
because it
wonderful.
Does take you away. It takes you into a different world.
It does, yeah.
In order to share it successfully.
But yes.
I do enjoy it. And I can see you enjoy it.
I
thank
do,
thank you
yes.
for starting with Highclere, and thank you for trying to speak and give trees and the world around us something of a voice.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this edition. There are more podcasts from life at the real Downton Abbey on my podcast page at ladycanarvon.com. And please don't forget to subscribe so you automatically receive the next episode.